Yes. We're ready?
Ready?
Yeah.
No, you're on time.
Yes, right?
Did you feel this shit?
Yes, we're ready to go.
Wait, the shock is affecting me.
Good evening. This is a meeting of the Consolidated Commission on Utilities for both GPA and GWA matters. And for the record, those present are myself, Commissioner Chaco, Commissioner Sanchez, Commissioner Santos, and Commissioner Martinez. It is 5:32 on my watch right now, so we're starting. First order of business is approval of minutes.
Motion to approve.
Second?
Second.
Further discussion?
No.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay, motion carries. Next one is the GM report.
Mr. Chair, if I may move to the resolutions first.
Sure, you gave us. Okay, that's fine.
First resolution is resolution 2022-06. And again, this is to authorize us to seek PUC approval, the utility service agreement contract, and also to seek PUC approval. Uh-huh. For, again, the U.S. Navy has been a contract of ours now for this by ending July 31st, 30 years. So this will be the beginning of the next 10-year contract. The contract is basically very similar, very little changes in it. One significant change that we liked was the opportunity to provide more services to the DOD facilities, for example, distribution type of services. As you all know, we're quite strong in providing that service. We do it for 52,000 customers. And our hope is that one day that we can provide that type of service within the base. I believe with a win-win scenario for both the military community and ourselves. We'll get to make some additional revenues while they can save themselves, save money from the current contracts that they have. So again, as I've gone through in the work session, this contract is for the next 10 years. I'd like to say that Navy has been an excellent partner of ours, and that they have consistently worked with us in various things. And of course, there are about 18 to 20% of our customers. They pay that much of the debt. They're providing us land for renewable energy, which unfortunately is still in the spirit court. And so with that, Mr. Chair, as per the work session and everything, and if you want me to go through that again,
No, but I think we may have some questions now. Sure. Because you went through it on the work session really well. Commissioner Chalko, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, John, you were referring to taking on some of the work on Naval Base Guam that the BOSS contractor, DZSP, is currently performing, right, for the transmission line?
No, we're not doing that right now, but the new contract allows for Navy to contract and us to work together and contract to do such type of services. So that's going to...
That's what you're proposing in the new contract?
That's in the language that's in the new contract.
The new contract, okay.
So that's the change that, before that didn't have that opportunity. So one may say that the Navy would consider when they, before going out, getting costs from us and saying, okay, I can see that I can get my services cheaper. Then excluded from part of the BOSS contract if necessary.
So that's a proposed contract or something that you're signing with the Navy?
No. We're just saying the language that allows both parties to
start negotiating that new contract?
Okay. And to affect the contract. Because in here, there's some services the Navy can provide to us, some that we can provide to them.
Okay. And that would be at a certain rate schedule?
That's for the get the demand and everything. This is a rate schedule that's set by the PUC. Mm-hmm. Now for the any other services, again, it could be what is their rate schedule now that they do to everybody, just like us, no? Or later on we can negotiate something. So there's no rate schedule in that, or on that issue in this one.
There's no set rate schedule, but the goal is to get to that level where you establish a rate schedule if they're open to having contracting GPA to do that.
That's correct. I think you didn't know typically how that's done. Yes, again, we file with the PUC, the CCU, then we file with the PUC, and then that goes into their rate schedule. Because right now their rate that they're authorized either through the PUC or transmission level. No? They can go to distribution level. So the numbers that are coming from off my head is really, if they were a distribution customer, this is what we'd probably cost them.
Okay. And
they share in the distribution cost that we have now.
Right. And what roughly have you guys done some rough order of magnitude as to what that would look like in the form of income?
Yeah, about several years ago, I think it was $6 million more.
Annually?
And that was the last time. But all you have to do is take the. No, I don't want to have to do it. I can pull up. That's the kind of number.
You can provide us the information. Maybe.
Yeah, I can run it. But you know, right now transmission they're paying. Let me see, what are they paying? I think 6 cents. No, versus the 9. So take 4 cents times 350 million kilowatt hours. No? If that you were doing all the bases, right? Then that's the long.
Okay, Commissioner Sanchez.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, John, you know, right now they bid it out. Is the thinking we would be allowed to bid on it to compete with their?
I don't know the details.
It just gives the opportunity.
That's right.
If both parties want to explore it,
yeah.
Then the Navy could explore it directly, kind of like the whole customer service agreement.
Yeah.
The Navy has decided we're not bidding out our power needs. We're signing up with GPA. It's been at the wholesale level, basically. But now we want the military wants the possibility that if GPA can do the distribution level instead of just the transmission level, if it's in there, you know, we've always thought we could be very competitive with the private guy, right? And if we can do that and be competitive, then this new agreement allows them to talk with you. Because I'm also thinking that I was curious whether we'd have to about establishing a rate with the PUC versus just, you know, some event. They just want to hire you to run their distribution, and we would just do it on a cost basis. Why do we have to run to the PUC and set up a rate
that,
for?
That's really an option that maybe is going to be theirs, because typically, you know, in any rate proceeding, they will intervene to make sure that they pay their fair share. So that could be, but even again under that case or that condition, it brings us a substantial amount of revenue. So again, but this option is actually kind of a behoof of ourselves. No? We have mentioned it to previously, and we just wanted that opportunity to be in the new utility service agreement. So that.
Sure.
So that at least now, the captain or future captains, our teams, can have a discussion, and you know, if it comes out, whoa, we can save, bring in $6 million in revenue, and they can save $6 to $12 million, which is kind of,
And then everybody wins.
That's like everybody's happy, no? When
yeah.
We begin that, and of course. No one's really training T&D personnel except ourselves. We're the only one going out and having apprenticeship program. So it's easier enough for us now to station people personnel in certain bases and expand our T&D team to take up the additional work and at a good return.
So this is different. I mean, this opportunity wasn't in the prior agreement. We're now putting you and the Navy want to now put it in this agreement because you see that the potential for benefits to the Navy, benefits to our ratepayers.
That's correct.
Great.
So that's the only single thing. all the others, transfers of properties, all of that is, it's the same. All the other meetings, you know, because our team do have regular meetings with the, you know, with the military, NAFPAC team. We're always coordinating different parts.
Okay, is there a motion? Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
And John, Article 12 is new as well?
Article 12.
Acknowledging the PUC?
No.
No? It was part of the existing?
Yes.
All rates have to be set, and in fact, when this rate was done, they intervened with all their lawyers and everyone to make sure.
Okay, on the highlight section, though, it kind of points out Article 12. So what is the difference between the old agreement and the new agreement for Article 12?
Nothing's changed.
Okay.
They still acknowledge the PUC as our rate-setting entity.
Okay. No further questions.
Motion to approve.
Second. Oh, wait. Who's
let him.
Doesn't matter. Move, Commissioner Chocko. Okay. Second by Commissioner Santo. Okay. Further discussion? No?
This is good. This is good.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Next, John.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My apologies, my mic wasn't on. Next resolution 2022-07, again, this is to get the authorization for the overhaul of major overhaul of cabinet unit number 2, and again, subject to the PUC approval. This is an overhaul that we have delayed, you know, for various reasons, including COVID, and one time, again, we couldn't get the personnel in from Temis from Taiwan to help us accomplish this work. And so, again, as was noted in the work session, Cabers 2 has experienced a substantial number of downtime, no? Or force outages, not unforced outages. Force outages. Yeah. And again, from boiler tube leaks, as well as always insufficient gas flow to the air preheaters and different things like that. So again, we have laid out the total work. The total work is about $4,960,602. It is budgeted in our CIP. And again, this will help us restore plant efficiency of the plant. In addition to, again, bringing its capacity up to at least 55, which is kind of where I have these machines now. They're rated 66, and they used to be 66 all the time, but again, with also the decision to retire, we're trying not to put as much money into the machine, but this is quite kind of important because
we still need it,
and we don't want it to fail in the middle of the next, you know, in the next 3 years, and we have to do the turbine overhaul. There's a single point of failure that you're in, we're in a substantial difficult situation. So again, that's the request, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any questions or motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion second.
Second.
Second, Commissioner Martinez. Further discussion? None. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Nay. Motion carries unanimous. Okay, John, we've got one more.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. FY 2022-08, again, this is for the approval of the 2022 integrated resource. And again, the 2022 integrated resource, as in other resources of different calendar year, if you will, is our updates and actually take all the accomplishments of potential governments of the previous integrated resource and plan ahead for the next 10 to 20 years and most especially for the next 10 years as to what are some of the investments necessary to achieve, again, providing your supply side requirements, generation. In this case, because we are going to renewables and we do have a mandate to achieve 50% by 2035, the integrated resource plan looked at all the things necessary to accomplish 50% renewable by 2030. Yeah? So again, we will be ahead of that mandate, but the integrated resource, I'll just highlight, you know, for the public, what are some of the key highlights of it? He's saying that Ukudu and the 41 megawatt are part of the plan, and this is the last conventional unit that we can foresee for the next 20 years, the needed necessary. Other units will be retired as more and more renewables are added into the system. Now, how much more renewables are going to be added into the system based on the plan, looking at the next 10 years by 2030? We're looking at about 400 megawatts of new solar PV capacity or combination of renewable solar, wind, or anything else that could come in, because we, when we go for bid, we don't limit the bid to one to solar PV. It still opens it to you know, domestic to the type, right? So it is saying to achieve 50% renewable, of course, and with the Okudu plants and everything, we need to put in 408 megawatts of capacity. It's also saying that to accommodate the additional renewables, we need to invest potentially, and again, potentially, because we still have to go through and say, you know, okay, this one is priority, maybe this one can be done something else, but he identifies what potentially is necessary, not only potentially, but what they could see is necessary, but it's potentially the net cost in the neighborhood of about $230 million. This includes, again, one standalone battery for the system, a synchronous condenser so that the system can operate. If there's a fault in the system, there can be an opening of the breakers and not prevent blackouts. You know, it's looking at, again, a control system that will take all of this supply that we no longer are going to be operating with 15 or 20 generators. We're going to be operating with thousands of supplies. So some they have to be talked into each other one way or another if we are going to provide quality service. No? So again, those are the key. It also looked and identified, you know, we've had the net metering program since 2009, and we've had a free-flowing net metering program. So they, you know, they have studied. They're studying six substations, and from what we see so far, that's in this. I mean, the balance will be coming over the next month or two, which I will bring again to you. It's showing that in some circuits, we are already having some voltage problems. Higher voltage because there's too many solar PV, uncontrolled solar PV within the system. It's also saying that. Again, if the recommendation is that if the solar PV capacity is 30%, it's greater than 30% of the minimum load, no? Then you're going to start seeing this. So again, it's a good gauge for us to determine what areas can still accept uncontrolled PV and what areas that are in that I definitely have to say, hold on a minute, I can't add any more here. You're already having voltage problems here, and therefore we need to see how do we address this. No? So again, you know, we talk about whether allow batteries or no batteries. Again, this is the guide now that will make us make those determinations. So again, it's only about 9 volumes, right? If I remember correctly, and we did put it out in November, mm-hmm. And you know. So what we'll do now is, once you've passed it, then we'll be open to be provided to the PUC and open to anyone that will want to see the tremendous amount of work that has been done to put together an integrated resource plan. And so last but not least, I'd like to recognize, you know, the team that, and you're seeing the professional teams coming to the that put this plan together in conjunction with some consultants, very specific consultants on metering and all of them. And so again, congratulating Mr. John Cruz and his team, Jennifer Sablan, and all the other team members, sorry, the key members that put this together. No? So that, Mr. Chairman, is my summary of the integrated resource plan.
You know, John,
I'm open to other questions.
This is what sets GPA and GWA apart, is the planning that you people do. It's continuously planning. You don't stop. You don't say, okay, the plan is done, you put it on the shelf. You continually work on this, so that's a testament to both GPA and GWA. So it's a good job. Thank you. Thank you for your efforts and the people. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve the updated integrated resource plan, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a second?
Second, but I just have one
sure.
question, just so we know we're all on the same page. On page 207, right, this is the rebate reset for our DSM program?
That's correct.
Okay, so just real question, right? Is the PUC going to go and look at this, or is this it?
No,
can they come back and tell us no, or, you know, because, for example, on 207, there's some changes, right, to the existing rate.
On the rebate,
right.
I think
rebate.
The last work session that I'm going to bring that back to you.
Right,
and,
on the numbers per...
Right, in February, right.
Right,
and we'll have a discussion on that. And then again, we can go to the...
Okay, that's fine. But I guess my question is, can the PUC go in and drill down just on this section as part of the... Is the RIP a group or...
Well, because the DSM is funded out of the LEAC,
right.
that's where the rate piece and how we fund demand side management, that's one part where we touch the PUC.
Yeah.
Because we asked their permission and they agree that
to do this.
Since the demand side management reduces our use of fuel and all that stuff, what better funding source than the one proposed
right.
by GPA saying, let's use the LEAC to provide some funding for people to get, you know, to do demand side management so they can lower their bill. So to the degree we change rebates and all that, they would look at it, but I'm confident because we've been doing DSM with the PUC for mm-hmm. quite some time now that, you know, we'd have to justify the change in rate, but I don't think we're going to have trouble justifying the concept, you know. And, you know, the prices change over time, so you might have to explain it to them.
I want to say one more thing, in line with that. The IRP and all these different components, even the capital investment that's there, is not really set in stone as to, you know. What it does do is it identifies all the things that we would need to do. So what is the process is such now that we will, for example, we would like to go out for new capacity by this summer. So the next meeting or the meeting after it, I'll bring to you and say, commissioners, I would like to go out and proceed with 120 megawatts of new renewables. If you agree, it goes to the PUC for their approval, and then we do the process again where we bid it out, then it comes back to you with the contract. So it's really the plan, and then we will now begin to work within the plan, of course, and always, but everyone's kind of aware now that this is how we're heading down the stream. We're heading towards 50%. This is how we see it. We come to you. You'll have your opportunity to, you know, to discuss and make your decisions on the various things. No? So again, and just like Commissioner Santos has brought up on the rebate, there's a change that reduces it and like to have more of that discussion and that we'll bring that forward. Huh?
Commissioner Tucker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But John, regarding the DSM side, the rate that's part of the LEAC, there's no changes proposed to that. You're just changing how you're going to distribute those funds from the LEAC. Mm-hmm.
The majority seems to be, the only issue here might be the dryers and the...
Yeah.
Most of it is the stuff, but again, perhaps that's too drastic. Maybe again, before one, maybe it could be a 50-50 split and then pace it out. No? But their finding is that the returns on the, you know, on that is not the best in the dryer sector.
As opposed to an air conditioner.
That's correct. Yeah.
But you're also going to open this up to the commercial side as well.
It is.
We have the non-profit side. Yeah. Other areas.
And some already are out. The big,
right.
And then John, on the IRP summary, the adjusted load forecast for solar rooftop renewables, is that 30.8 megawatt total or in addition to the current?
We have a load forecast, mm-hmm. and in that, I'm not sure it was my team, but in the load forecast, 30.8, we look at it and say we need this much load, right? So we take 30 megawatts out of that to be by rooftop. And then the balance now is what we plan for
capacity
supply.
But the 30.8, that's on top of the existing 24?
Yeah, yeah. That's include.
So in that's what double rooftop.
So basically doubling it, so 50, almost
plus
60
max.
Megawatts.
Yeah, right now there's 28, and so that will be about almost, yeah.
Almost doubling.
And then furthermore, I mean, it does, and again, I would hope that others may not see that as, oh, we're limiting rooftop. No, because to do 400 megawatts of solar PV capacity, you know, of course the cheapest route, and you know, we've shown national government that says that, which is kind of straightforward, just to put up utilities.
It's the fastest growing.
But then at some point, you're also going to be doing other things. No?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the thinking out of the box of our team will start coming to you as to what are these different options. And we can go out with several at one time to achieve the additional 400 megawatt, provided we are getting Okudu and all of that. And I always stress that, because without that, then we have to...
None of this is going to happen.
We're going to have to slow down the integration of renewable and try to fix the generators so that they can work.
But US EPA...
work well, but it will work with the system and all of that. But so that's all. And again, excuse me, I just keep making sure, because it's kind of get lost in the... In the concept, but
John,
the whole plan has that.
Yeah, I think, and to be honest with you, I passed out an article for our commissioners to read. Costa Rica's as close as you can get to 100% renewable, and even they still have backup generators. They still use generators. They have hydropower, geothermal, and wind. Those are the big ones. Photovoltaics and biomass make up less than 1% of the total renewable portfolio. So, you know, but they still have conventional generators, mm-hmm. because they went 300 days on strictly renewable. But, you know, they have those days when something happens. So, you know, they have to take care of some piece of equipment.
And
so,
as you show,
I mean, so, yeah.
As you show, Mr. Chairman, 2/3 of it comes from hydropower.
Yeah.
Guam
does
not have hydropower resources,
firm power.
Right? And that's firm, right? So the best fit for Guam for renewables, we've proven it, is solar.
For now.
The fastest growing, well, we've proven it. Even when private partners, and we ask them to take the risk of what technology would you recommend, are you willing to risk your money to provide us power? No one's bidding wind, no one's bidding hydro, no one's bidding nuclear. The bids, and they're all technology neutral. All the bids are for solar, because that's where the private sector believes they have the greatest chance of producing the output we need at the lowest price. If the private sector is only willing to risk their own money with solar, why would we risk ratepayer money on other technologies that no one else would risk there?
Of course.
And that's the, you know, in the hearing last week, it's unfortunate. And you know, maybe John, as part of our, maybe we should talk with folks like at Micronesian Alliance so we can teach them a little bit. Because they just don't appreciate the trade-offs that are involved, and why even someone, as the chairman's pointed out, with significant renewables, they're not getting it from solar. But Guam can only get it from solar, right? We got typhoon says no wind, and we don't have big rivers. So we are who we are, and we have to work with who we are. But this integrated resource plan is going to take us to 50% renewable energy, not using oil, coming from solar. And I'm sure that the 10-year IRP update that will occur in a few years is only going to propose even more solar, especially as battery technology becomes more and more efficient and affordable. And because we know you can make the energy from the sun, but when the sun goes down, you need to keep the energy going. And the battery, the cost of batteries are not there yet. But we're seeing, if we had bought 100% solar with our first solar farm, we would have been paying 21, 22 cents a kilowatt hour. 7, 8 years later, we're seeing prices at 9, 10 cents a kilowatt hour. And it's that old saying, you want to ride the technology curve up while you ride the technology price down. Why is it difficult for the entire transportation system of the world to go electric? Because the cost, the technology hasn't allowed the average citizen to access it. It's the same thing with why we are working our way towards being 100% renewable. And as you pointed out at the hearing, John, the overwhelming majority of nations and states are giving themselves to 2045, 2050 to get to 100%. They recognize you can't do it overnight, and they don't want to pay for technology today that they know is going to be cheaper 5, 7, 10 years from now. And we don't want to take our ratepayer money and throw it all into expensive technology now. We want to grow with it. And your numbers prove that we can lower the power bill even at 25% renewable. We can lower it more at 50% renewable. And as we march towards 100% renewable or whatever technology allows us to get, that's how we will continue to lower power bills. But no one is saying you can do it overnight. And that's what you do the integrated resource plan for, is to plan how do we keep moving forward to guarantee reliable service at the lowest possible price. And the centerpiece of our IRP is renewables, and it's solar. But our IRP wisely says to do it at the lowest cost for ratepayers, you got to do it over time. And that's our plan. And I know John, you and me and the chairman in particular, this is like our third or fourth IRP. GPA constantly does IRPs, constantly updates it to say, where are we now? Can we take advantage of what technologies, what changes in the world to lower our costs for ratepayers? And I was happy to hear you say at the hearing that you believe we are about to build the last major fuel supply generation piece on Guam, that we believe the long-term future will be having a generator that is backup, not baseload, and having solar energy with battery storage being the main carrier and provider of energy, because it will increasingly become cheaper and cheaper for our ratepayers. And I like the way we get teased, because some of us are a little older, but I look forward to the savings, not only that we will benefit from in our generation, but our kids and our grandkids are going to benefit from increasingly lower and lower power bills, keeping money in their pocket for their families and our economy, so we're not sending it out for oil, and taking advantage of the expertise and experience of homegrown professionals here at the Guam Power Authority, the citizens that are confirmed by the legislature that serve on the PUC, and we elected representative of ratepayers. We all work together to reduce the cost of power, and we all recognize that it takes concerted, intelligent effort, and it takes time. There's no magic bullet, right? And yet, this plan lays out how we're going to get to 25%, 50%, and 50% by 2030. I mean, that's a very short period of time where we will cut our power bills, the use of oil by half. 25% reduction is 1 million barrels, as you testified, John, 1 million barrels a year less oil will be burned when we turn on Ukudu and we put on the solar farms. And we help the South by moving just one little piece of the Ukudu power complex down to Cabarrus, where we already own the land, we already can fuel it. And that little piece is going to be on, 3% of the time? PD has had 24/7 power belching out into the air since the 70s. We are about to change that. And we're going to change it because of the Ukudu Power Complex, because of solar energy. And hopefully with the help of the legislature, we can add greater reliability for the South by placing 40 megs down at Cabarrus while we shut down 120 megs of Cabarrus 1 and 2. And long term, begin to look at eliminating the need for other fossil fuel generation down the road as we add more renewables, both utility scale as well as individual. Because I think right now the average, it would take something like 37,000 houses to produce 300 megs of utility scale solar. We're installing 5 a month today without any changes in net metering or anything. And so at 5 a month, we're never going to get there. The only way we're going to get there is to do these utility scale solar farms that other utilities do, that we're planning, that is in this IRP. And even the Navy, who's now willing to say, I want to be your customer for another decade, saying, hey, here's some land, put solar on it, and provide it to the entire island. Even they recognize that we're going in the right direction for the right reasons and that their costs are going to drop. And that's why they're signing up again with us with another agreement for another 10 years. So, you know, kudos to you, John. Kudos to your team. We have to keep working on it. I enjoyed watching the hearing. You had a young engineer testify, and he was excited about what we're doing. And we had a senior generation manager say, you got to retire, Cabras. You've got to move to new technology. And all of this is going to benefit us, our children, our grandchildren, the economy, and handle the growth, not just for the military. Guam is going to grow. And we want to be there for when Guam grows. And this IRP and these things that we're approving today are pieces of the puzzle that we are putting into place to improve the power situation for our people. Those two bills you testified on last week, they're pieces of the puzzle that the legislature can help us by passing to reduce ratepayer costs, increase reliability, especially for the South, clean our environment, a 99.4% reduction in harmful emissions. Even US EPA says, do your plan, right? The Navy says, we're signing up, we like your plan. We just adopted the IRP because we have confidence in you and your team and our successors that you've come up with the plan to reduce the cost of power, to improve service, and to keep our environment clean and safe for our ratepayers. All of them good.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, I just have a couple of quick questions on the project description list for the IRP. Can you tell me what the adding the clutches to the CTs and the demo CT and add motor static start, are those, if what does demo stand for? Is that demolished? Demobilized? What does demo start for?
What is demo?
It says demo, dedido CT, demo CT, and add motor static start, only if retiring capacity.
Yeah, that's to allow it to be a motorized machine instead of generating power. So instead of retiring all the machinery, there's still value to the generator. The generator will now be, instead of it producing power out, it's bringing in, it's being run as a motor to give inertia. It's a lot about having inertia in the system, so that when there's a fault that hits, you're able to
adjust.
Yeah, otherwise, if there's no inertia, which is what PVs are, just straight and something happens, you're going to have a big drop.
So you would actually be sending power to it to,
right.
to, and that's part of the synchronous condenser conversion.
Yes, that's the same thing.
So that helps
stabilize
you
voltage.
Stabilize
that's
frequency.
That's the same thing. It's just whether you make it. There's a potential where you can do it two ways. No, one, you can still keep it as a supply side,
mm-hmm.
and you can use it as a synchronous condenser.
And you would still need to add the clutch to all of them in order to accomplish that. Okay. And then we talked about this in the working session, but over 50% of the projected budget for the IRP comes from the standalone BESS, right, at $131 million.
Mm-hmm.
And is that for the load shifting that we've been talking about all this time, or is that for something different?
Oh, there's a lot of solar PV that's in the system now, right?
Mm-hmm.
28 plus the 60 that's coming on. Plus, again, we have Hanwha that's coming on, say, you know, that's almost 180, 120 plus.
40, and then the 40 protest.
plus the 30, you know, it's 150, right? A typical daytime load is 200. So you take 150 out of the 200, you only have 50 megawatt that the base load anybody can run. No? So what you can do now is get a battery and take some of that production in the daytime, right, from the renewables, store the battery, and then keep the generators running smoothly at this most efficient rate, see?
Mm-hmm.
So the result of all that will provide you with savings, it provides you with reliability, because then you have the reserve. In case you really need it at only at a certain time, you can save that battery and use it at that time. So it allows you all that flexibility. So we believe that that's one of the main items that we should go. So what we're going to do now is take that and work the economics out of it, work all of the other plans, and then make a more definitive recommendation to yourself. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's, yeah, you're correct. That's the one of the biggest, but that's the only way we're going to shift energy.
Mm-hmm. And reduce our carbon.
More battery systems.
Yeah.
Huh?
And
again,
stop burning oil.
We are confident that we can do that, because when we have the backup generators to achieve, to help us in the days that, you know, for the issue.
On a cloudy day or...
Okay. Any further questions? No? Ready for your question? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those nay. Motion carries unanimous.
Okay.
Thank you very much, John.
All right.
Do you want to give us
your report just quickly?
Yep.
Sure. Give us the highlights.
Here's the highlights. Here, the demand is already, 2022 demand is already exceeding the 2019. So
wow.
The way that's good news, I mean, you see Mr. Kim's report, this past year we had 800 new customers. The energy is not tracking almost close to 2019. Currently it's 2019 because we were starting to grow a little bit, and then, you know, the pandemic. So. Kind of like off here, right? 332, demand this month to 4092. Tell me zero, that's a lot. No, that's not a lot. So again, we're doing some work to get the 332 up, but again, we should be able to meet the demand this month. On solar PV, of course, as soon as the power rate started going up, you're getting some more sales, but I think in the past, it was maybe 15. So again, we'll see, but this is the last two. So we now have 2,295 customers, 28.2 megawatts in the system. Okay. Fuel prices went up, came down, they went up. I think it's starting to come down a little bit again. PUC will be selling the LEAC this coming Thursday. Thanks. Demand side, again, I won't go through all of this, but it gives you an idea of how much we're putting into the system, how much more money we have. 85, almost 86% of everything that we provide rebates on is air conditioning. As you can see, the continued trend of applications and continued to move up. Again, the PUC provided us $3 million a year budget for this one. Just some updates, the power plant, a lot of work still going on, we're still working towards financial closing. We need this bills to be passed so I can have some certainty on that. They're still working on their permit, but I know they're doing other things. But again, work continues. Hopefully I have much better news next month longer in date. COVID-19, 93% of our employees vaccinated. We have about 26 cases in January itself. We're at heading, as I said, like everything else, it's been at peak. So far, there's no, we haven't had to interrupt services. And so again, we continue to work with our employees. We recognize we have a team on board, and Tracy and her safety group are constantly doing this contact tracing. Having people, stay home, making sure that we test them, because we have our own self-test kit and all of that. So like everybody else, we
we are experiencing that. And again, we're a bit fortunate that we're not getting to our services. 1.3 million emergency rental assistance program that provides for utilities on payments and stuff. That's been so much we've been helping the customers together with DOA, right? We did a round table, we did have that in 2012-13. And again, I had the public hearing last week, Thursday. Thanks. Update, the UC has approved the BFC for the new storage tank. They have approved a letter from the UC chairman about not stopping us from requiring batteries. I did have a discussion with them that we have to have a discussion on this because, you know, the batteries are part of taking full solutions. And so we'll be having more discussions on that. Up for approval is the second ratification of the contract with diesel fuel supply under the DEC adjustment. So one night sale okay with the DEC, and of course the recommendation by the BPCC was to hold the DEC at 17.1 cent. One might say, whoa, where are we in terms of rates? No. Well, if you look at the rate here, long is 26.9 for the average 100 residential customer. You know, it's like here, 28 point something, and there's some subsidies here. Look at the rest, Oahu, Hawaiian Islands, Virgin Islands, Lanai. They're all within 30 some cents a kilowatt hour. No? And this is as of January 2022. Now one might ask yourself, well, why does Hawaii have such a high cost? No? Well, uncontrolled, it's, you know, roofed up, in my opinion, is roofed up at any cost. So do we want to pay that amount of money? Or I think what we're trying to do together as an island is trying to put renewables and reduce the cost of our customers. So maybe at some point it's going to have to start increasing a little bit, but certainly not at this level. And this is similar to what I've seen also put out by the PUC of California, showing what the West Coast in terms of its cost per kilowatt hour based on renewable. So they're rethinking some of that at this point. Next. I think I won't go through the rest, Mr. Chair. This gives you a trend pretty much the same. Just upstate.
John, quick question: if our sales are going up and tourism's still not back, where is the new sales coming from?
New customers are coming.
And you mentioned 800 new customers. 800.
I think part of it is houses. But we'll make that a
cheap mortgage.
I mean, we're glad there's more. We want to provide more load to our customers who need it, right? We like that. I just know tourism is really still, you know, not there, and yet, like you said, we've added 800 customers. The chairman points out housing is getting built. You pointed that out. So there's a lot of other demand occurring on Guam that we're seeing a growth in sales. We're seeing a growth in load, and I'm just trying to make sure I understand better where is the source of this growth? Where is the source of load?
We'll turn out the residential, the commercials, the newbie, and everybody as one of our main reporting items. And so we'll show that to you by.
And then John Kim, did you have a comment?
Oh, yes. Most of the growth has been the residential side. The hotels, even though they're not operational, their reduction was less than 20%. Uh-huh. They're still running it.
Yeah, they keep the building.
Yeah, so they still need to cool the buildings, and they still are operating partially.
And the new customer profile is mostly residential, of the 800 that you added?
Yes, because there's no more condominiums, apartments that has come up. All the notable ones I've seen is the one near Harvest. There's a huge section there that has recently opened up. Yeah. And
Because that's important. There was a perception by some of our critics that we're doing all of this load growth just for the military. You know, it's not. Guam is growing, right? And it's not even growing with tourism. It's growing with housing. And huge pent-up demand for housing.
But people are still even building, Commissioner Sanchez, people are still building for the tourism market. Surprisingly. I mean, there's this huge development up next to Two Lovers Leap.
But even without that showing up yet, Mr. Chair, we're seeing load today is going up.
But I'm saying that growth is still occurring.
Mm-hmm.
Guam's
growth.
Guam's growth is still occurring, not just the military.
Yeah, yeah. As the Admiral gave a great interview today, but you know, that base is still under construction. That isn't drawing any power. All of this growth is not coming from the new base. It's coming from...
The other part of the equation is that part of the military are putting in more and more demand side.
Efficient,
management.
Yeah.
They're similar to what we're doing. UAVC, we're helping with some of that.
Right.
Another thing. So they are, while they're growing, they're cutting, of course, in the marine base, I think it was estimated to about 6 megawatts.
Yeah, we can handle that.
And that's, again, that's
Don Coyote's still under construction.
Yeah. and the chairman's right. When tourism finally kicks back in, you're going to see some recovery on the tourism side for demand.
Right.
And that's going to add. But it's very impressive to see we're adding 800 customers in the past year, most of which is residential. You're seeing us return to average load and peak load that is almost close to pre-COVID, and this is without tourism, any significant recovery by tourism. So all of that indicates that Guam is going to continue to grow, which is why we need the Ukudu power plant, which is why we want to continue to add solar, because that in combination is what's going to lower power bills and yet keep reliable power available to our ratepayers. It's all good. Very good.
How many customers do we have there?
About 52.8.
Yes. It's about 52,800.
Thank you.
Okay.
That's a meter, right? Those are the number of meters, right?
So yes, they're based on meters.
Right. So the Navy is one big meter. So
we consider that as one customer.
Yeah. So if you take the other impressive part to me is you take the military out. That's our own growth. That's Guam growth. That's not.
The other way I calculate that is if the military load is all residential, you're talking about having meters equivalent to about 75,000 customers.
In addition to 20.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yet we just service them with the one.
You service them
one meter.
About 17. 19 meter
very large condo.
In the area, a service one customer. It's
So it's good to see the recovery because, you know, the more load, more growth, more customers helps pay the bills.
Spreads
more people are paying for it, which is why when we talk about the debt restructuring that we're seeking from the legislature, we want to take advantage of the fact that with Guam growing, you have more people to help pay the bill, which is why delaying some of the debt service till later when more ratepayers are helping to pay for the bill helps all ratepayers. And that's another reason why we're very appreciative that Senator St. Augustine understands public finance and introduced the bill, because he knows it can save money for ratepayers. And we hope that he'll be successful in convincing other senators, including our oversight chairman, who admitted he didn't understand even basic net present value. And if you don't understand that, then you don't understand public finance and how we layer debt service and savings. We want to front load the savings for ratepayers. We don't want to delay the savings for ratepayers. And that's what you manipulate and think about when you price out and decide how we're going to structure the bonds. The money we save for ratepayers now is far more valuable to our ratepayers now than it is 10 years from now. Ratepayers want relief now. And that bill will help us provide ratepayer relief now, not later, now. And then on the back end, depending on how we structure it, you know, we've got subject matter experts at GITA, our underwriters, ourselves, the PUC. We understand public finance very well. The idea that we had thought of when we built Ukudu was the refinancing. If we take savings now for ratepayers, savings on the back end are reduced and costs go up. But when you delay costs using net present value, you're paying it with cheaper dollars. And more importantly, in the 2030s, a bunch of our debt comes off the books. And that eliminates that debt service, even if other debt has to increase. So we smooth out debt for for our ratepayers, which is one way we keep the base rate, which hasn't moved since 2013. Because we understand public finance, we understand net present value, we understand how to manage our debt in a way that helps ratepayers not have to deal with what we have to deal with on the oil side when oil does this. On the debt profile side, we know exactly what to do, and that's why we're layering. We want to refi that bond to layer the debt service where we give ratepayer savings now and with dollars that they can appreciate now. And when we have to incur higher debt service on the back end of the structure, it'll be at a time we're paying off other loans. And so we save debt service on other loans, we gain on others, and that's how we smooth out the cost of debt service for our ratepayers and keep that base rate steady.
Yeah. I'll be remiss, Mr. Chair, if I didn't take the opportunity to thank Senator Sinagusa naturally for sponsoring this.
He gets it.
He was really instrumental in helping us get moving on this.
And there were other senators who asked some very good questions, I think.
Yes, yeah. I think there were.
So that's good. I mean, we're hopeful the legislature comes together as a body.
Okay.
If there's nothing else, John, are you done?
Just the CFO's quick report, Mr. Chair.
Oh,
yes. I'll go very quickly for the month of December. Mm-hmm. For the base revenues, for the quarter was about $41.8 million. We budgeted about $38.6 repairable by $3 million. Compared to last year, for the quarter was about $39 million, so we favorable by $2.6 million. In terms of megawatt sales, the megawatt hours has increased. We increased by 13,000 megawatts compared to budget. Compared to prior years, it was about, for the quarter, it was 3,968,000 megawatts budget for the quarter. In terms of revenues, for the fuel revenues, for the quarter, we had about $2.9 million variance for the budget. We did better. And compared to last year, it was $26 million for the quarter. And this partly due to the fact prior year, our BFD was 8.6 cents. In October, we increased to 15 cents. In December 1st, we increased to 17 cents. In terms of O&M, our actual for the quarter is about $17.5 million. We budget about $19.3 million. We favorable about $1.7 million. Compared to prior years, our actual was about $16.5 million. We're unfavorable by $1 million. But we're favorable compared to budget. As to the customer count, as we look at Mr. Benedict at the first quarter of 2021, we had about 52,000 customers. And the first quarter of 2022, about 52,800 customers. So we grew about 800 customers for the year. In terms of debt service coverage, 1.95, which is very good. The next slide is under recovery. Currently, as of December, we're under recovery is about 21.89 million. And that's increasing due to the increase in fuel price. Lastly, this is a sample. We're in the last working session. Mm-hmm. We were asked to do what average customers will look like. We did 1,000 kilowatt hours for 2025. We projected as a consultant said about a small rate increase in days. However, it's very natural, it's less than a penny in increase in days rate. But what we can assume of the saving is on the VX side. This is based on when the diesel fuel is about $100 and will probably go around 11.6 cents per year. So overall saving and the bills preliminary is about 18 cents. And the last one is with financing and without financing.
18%. 18, right? Am I reading that right?
18%.
Okay,
yes.
Not 18 cents. 18%.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, 18%. As if we did financing and non financing, the rate difference for the consultant say was about, if you do no refinancing, possible rate increase about 2.9%. So financing has an impact on our base rate.
I'm sorry, what's the increase if we don't get the financing refinancing approved by the legislature? What's the rate increase?
2.9%.
And we avoid that if we do get the financing?
Yes.
Okay, so that, I mean, there's the nutshell. To help ratepayers avoid a 2.9% rate increase, we need to refinance the 2012 bond with the structure that we've discussed. And so let's, you know, that this actually would be useful information to give to the senators that without the financing.
Net present value savings off.
Well, some, not all the senators understand net present value, but they do understand. That's why I thought it was better. Show them the bill.
Yeah.
Show them the bill that says if you don't approve the refinancing, you're increasing the cost to ratepayers by 2.9%. Why would you? We need to do everything possible to reduce anything we can for our ratepayers, whether it's on the base rate side, like debt service, or on the fuel side, like the LEAC, which is why we're building the solar farms and why we need the Ukudu Power Complex approved and supported, so that we can significantly reduce power bills. Am I doing reading this right? 17 to 18% by 2025, depending on whether they do the financing. And as John testified last week, we'll begin to approach 30% when we add the solar farms and Ukudu kicks in full, all right? And so I think over the next month or so, perhaps in our outreach, we can talk about really showing ratepayers, this is what it's gonna mean to your bill if we refinance, if Ukudu moves forward, and the piece of, you know, the piece in PD, you know, the whole idea of, you know, why is the legislation for PD important? Because it speeds up the permitting. And when you speed up the permitting, guess what? You speed up savings to ratepayers. You speed up reducing harmful emissions. The PD piece is all about speeding up this plan to reduce the cost to ratepayers. And that's why that bill is important. That's why we're so grateful again to Senator St. Augustine. We asked Senator Rogel if he would consider helping us. He declined. Senator St. Augustine saw that it would benefit ratepayers, and that's why he introduced it. And now we can really show our ratepayers we need that Ukudu complex and the solar farms that we're planning in the integrated resource plan to lower power bills. And the legislature can play their part. They can help us in this piece, in this puzzle that we're all putting together, by passing these two pieces of legislation to help our ratepayers. Right? And this is why I wanted you to put this bill together. Maybe in the forthcoming meeting, let's show them the real cost of power when the Ukudu and the solar farms are done. This is what the bills are gonna start to look like. You know, and that's not without even mentioning the 99% reduction in harmful emissions that US EPA wants us to do. They agree that we're doing the right things. And so, hopefully the legislature will join us in this effort.
Commissioner Tolman.
Thank you, Mr. Chun. And John, just so I get a clearer understanding, because the fuel recovery charge was reduced in both scenarios, right?
Yes.
So really we're comparing the 2025 with financing and 2025 without financing, really. So it's just under 1%, right, of savings with the financing? Most of that,
yes, it's under 1%.
Most of that,
yes,
reduction, yes, is coming from the reduction in the fuel recovery.
Right, right.
Of course, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's the big part.
But the financing saves just under 1%.
Yes.
Okay. Is that it, John?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, any other questions for our team?
No.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And good job, team.
Good job.
Okay. Can we go right into GWA?
Want to just keep going?
John Kim, can you send me those bills?
Yeah.
It's a video testimony, so I want to make sure I include
it. Yeah, I'll send you to you right now.
Yeah, thank you.
What did he say?
He said, we'll take as long as we need.
You brought your attorney.
Yeah.
I don't know. I know.
She's always supposed to be.
Christopher, how are you doing?
How are you? Are you ready, Mr. Cordata? We're missing two of our members. They'll be right back. They just need a little bathroom break. But go ahead.
Do you want me to start?
Do you have anything to add to your GM report? Nothing?
No, sir.
Okay. Do we have anything to add to the finance side? Nothing? Okay.
Good news. Thank you.
Very good.
But I can go over it again if you want.
Oh, yeah.
No.
And if you want to do it backwards, I'll...
Are there any
you can do it by yourself.
I seem to be doing a lot of things backwards lately. So
yeah. Yeah.
Well, they should be back.
Okay.
I didn't want to take a 5-minute break and then we all disappear. But you can actually keep going. You know, you have a quorum here.
It's your pleasure, Mr. Chair. Let me know what you want me to do.
It's a quorum present, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and start talking? Let's deal with the first resolution. You only have two resolutions for it, right?
We only have two resolutions.
Yeah. Right.
So, starting with resolution 06-FY-022, 2022 rather, this is seeking approval to provide transfers from the GWA Rate Stabilization Fund to the GWA General Fund. If you recall, in February of 2021, the board approved Resolution 11-FY-2021, establishing the GWA Rate Stabilization Fund and authorizing us to transfer up to $11.4 million from the working capital reserves, which was funded by the dissolution of the working capital reserves for debt service under a previous resolution in fiscal year 2020. In May, we submitted and the CCU approved our budget under the comprehensive review and update package that was submitted to the PUC in May. That budget included fiscal year 22 and the planned transfers from the rate stabilization fund that are required to be in the approved budget by resolution 11, FY2021, which established the rate stabilization fund. So you gave the authority to make to establish the rate stabilization fund, but you told us if we were going to make any transfers, we'd have to come present them to you in an approved budget. Well, we had that in the package that you approved that we submitted to the PUC in May, and they have still not taken action. We subsequently, in order to make sure we had something in place for fiscal year 22, asked you to approve a interim fiscal year 22 budget, which is essentially just rolling over the fiscal year 21 budget. But there were no planned transfers in that budget. They are in the budget that is before the PUC, for which we still have not received any action from the PUC. So this resolution seeks your approval to transfer up to $2 million out of the rate stabilization fund and into GWA's operating account to be recognized as revenues. And the purpose, as we described previously, is to make sure that we are able to meet our 1.25 debt service coverage ratios. So because we are still waiting on resolution on our comprehensive review and update and the rates for fiscal years 22 through 24, we need this. It's necessary and urgent that we receive this authorization to transfer up to $2 million from the rate stabilization fund. The fund is set up as a separate account. It's under the control of the trustee, and we will only make the transfers if it appears that we may not with the current revenues, meet our debt service coverage ratio targets.
Okay. Is there a motion?
Move to approve, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, is there a second? Commissioner Martinez? Further discussion? Anybody have any questions? Go ahead, Commissioner Santos.
Yeah, just a quick question, and we can do this, we can move this reserve around without PUC, okay?
Okay.
And we can move this reserve money around without PUC, okay?
Yes, all that's required is
us. And it makes sense, especially because right now they're still reviewing our rate case. So we need to, this was a good idea that allows us to protect like our coverage as needed coverage while you're in the middle of a rate case or waiting for a deliberation. So, you know, it's why we have we created a reserve for the money.
Yeah, and that was part of the reason you updated the PUC mm-hmm. on our FY22 budget, right?
Right.
Okay. Any further questions? No? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Next,
get out of here, really.
Next, okay. Mr. Chair, is Resolution 07-FY2022, and this is requesting approval to begin procurement on indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity, or IDIQ contracts, design build services contract, and also project management and construction management services contract. This is in relation to the island-wide sewer collection and transmission system repair, rehabilitation, and replacement work that needs to be done. The project's objective is to seek the PUC's approval to begin procurement for various IDIQ projects. The goal of these projects is to rehabilitate and repair or replace sewer lines that have been identified in our 2018 Water Resources Master Plan. The location of these projects vary. Route 10, Barragata, Route 1, PD, Agate, and Route 1, Assen, Force Main. So these are various projects that have been identified. The IDIQ contracts will allow us to issue specific task orders for these different projects for both the design build services that would be required for the replacements and also for the project and construction management services that would be required to oversee the construction of these projects. We anticipate that the projects that we've identified will be executed, which are important both to just the general maintenance of our infrastructure, but also these are regulatory compliance priorities that the US EPA has indicated to us they would like to see us do. So the projects are necessary. The estimated cost for these projects, as they appeared in our 2018 Water Resources Master Plan update, are approximately $13 million. So we know that this will exceed the PUC's contract review protocol amount. And we anticipate, based on our recent experience with the Route 1 Assen to Abilene CIPP project, that the project and construction management services will also exceed $1 million for these projects that have been identified. The sequencing and issuance of the task orders for these work will be based on regulatory priority and site-specific conditions. So obviously the sites with the worst condition we would want to prioritize. We anticipate that the contracts that we issue will be for 5 years with options to renew as allowed under Guam law. The funding source that we anticipate using includes bond funds that afforded the bond funds, grants, internally funded CIP or revenues, and system development charge funds, which have been identified in the 5-year CIP.
So you have the money.
Okay. Any further questions?
Move to approve, Mr. Chairman.
Move to approve? Okay.
Second.
Any further questions?
$13 million in sewer line repair.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimous. Anything else?
No, Mr. Chair, we don't have anything else. No issues, no further issues for decision. We have nothing, no updates to the management reports and financial reports that were provided during the work session.
Okay. Well, motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn, Mr. Chair. Nobody's going to object to that.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion to adjourn. Thank you very much. You guys should have gone first.
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry.
Don't you guys, don't you alternate?
We alternate, but you know, in issues like this where we're talking, normally one of us will have the poker chip and we exchange.
You did negotiate.
You did. Sorry, Miguel. You are the underclassman.
I am. Admittedly.
That one is John B for life.
Although walking around tonight, I look like some older. He's not hobbling.
How is he staying?
You look good, man. 0.8
over 7.
You feel good?
0.8 over 7.
Good for you. It's okay. You know,
well, I think what he meant was without the refinancing, you'd have to pay a slightly higher rate. But you're right, it's only like 1%. But, I mean,
it's kind of, yeah. Over $1 million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.